For Native American tribes in Washington state, salmon fishing is a way of life.
For an Indian, you're just not alive unless you're able to fish, to eat fish, not only for the economics, but for your culture. My tribe so believes in it so much that when we don't have enough for ceremonial purposes, we buy fish and freeze it for the winter time.
That's Lorraine Loomis, chairman of the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission and member of the Swinomish Tribe in Washington. Over the past three decades, Native American tribes in the state have seen their salmon harvests fall by about 75%.
Salmon runs are declining because of habitat. We're losing more habitat than we're able to restore. So that's a problem. We're born on water, raised on water, and it's just our life.
But this week, the Swinomish tribe got some good news in the form of a 4-4 split by the Supreme Court. John Elligo is a national correspondent for the New York Times, and he has the story for us. John, welcome.
Thank you.
So that split by the Supreme Court gave the tribe some good news in the form of what exactly?
So essentially what the decision does is it upholds a lower court ruling, which says that the state of Washington has to spend billions of dollars to fix roads that were essentially blocking streams. Now, these streams are important because in order for salmon to spawn, to lay eggs, they have to swim upstream. But when you build some of these roads over streams, they weren't building proper passages known as culverts below them. So what this ruling says is the state now has to fix them by 2030, which the Swinomish hope will then allow salmon to get upstream, spawn, lay eggs, and for that population to then increase.
What are the Stevens Treaties and what role did they play in this decision?
Well, the Stevens Treaties were some agreements that were come to between the governor of Washington at the time back in 1854 and 1855 and the tribes. And essentially what they said is the tribes said, okay, we'll give you these millions of acres of land. In exchange, we are reserving our right to fish these waters that our ancestors have fished before colonization. So it essentially gave them that right to continue to fish. And what happened over the years is that eventually it got to a point where the state was not necessarily respecting that. So you had this time in the 60s and the 70s, 1960s and 1970s, when it was a period called the Fishing Wars. And essentially you had Native American fishermen going out there and fishing outside of the so-called rules that the state had. And so some of them were getting arrested. Billy Franks was one of the famous advocates and activists, Native American activists on this front. And so that's really what started the court case, was they were saying, hey, we're out here fishing, and we are trying to uphold our treaty rights, but you're not respecting that, is what they were saying to the state.
Now, salmon fishing obviously has been impacted by this in recent years. What is the significance for this in the Pacific Northwest?
Well, you know, it's very significant for the tribes in the sense that if you think back, you know, they're the first people here on this continent, and they have been fishing forever. And for a lot of these folks still today, it's not just, you know, hey, let me go fish for fun. It's fishing because that's what they eat. It's fishing because that's what they sell to make money. It's fishing because that is what they do when they get together with their families. And, you know, what the tribes also like to say is that, hey, this ruling doesn't just help us. There's sports fishermen who are not Native Americans who also enjoy fishing and do that, you know. And so it's really become like a way of life for them. And I really got a chance to see that when I went out on a boat with the chairman of the tribe. I was out with him, one of his daughters and his wife. And this is kind of what they do. This is their family time. This is their bonding time. You know, they bring out chips. They bring out drinks. You know, in some ways, it's for them connecting with their traditions, connecting with who they are. Because this chairman, he went fishing with his father. His father went fishing with his father. And so it goes back many generations.
You don't get a lot of salmon fishing news, but that's what we're talking about right now with John Elligo, national correspondent for the New York Times, about a Supreme Court decision and how it's affecting Native Americans in the Pacific Northwest. John, I'm wondering, this was a split decision by the court. Can you tell us a little bit about why it was split and how the court has been dealing with tribal issues generally?
Yeah, well, this case was split in large part because Justice Anthony Kennedy, he was actually on the Ninth Circuit back when it decided an element of this case in 1984. So this case has been going on since the mid-70s. So it's been a pretty long-running decision. And so in this case, you know, Justice Kennedy had to sit out. And so the court was pretty much split along, you know, liberal ideological lines. And the case is really centered around different issues. And the current issue that hand that came up is when you have these treaties, what is the obligation of the state in honoring those treaties? And what the Native Americans were saying is that the treaties also guarantee a right that we have to have fish to harvest. If there are no fish, then there's no treaty. And so basically what they argued is that what the state was doing is by building road culverts and other development, they were destroying the habitat. And the courts have sided with them saying, you know, yes, there is an implied right in these treaties that say, hey, if you want to respect the treaty, then you cannot destroy the habitat that allows salmon to be in the water. And so that's kind of what was contested over here. And the courts did essentially uphold this ruling that there are these implied rights and treaties. And the one thing I'll say is that Native Americans see this as a very important issue for treaties across the country, because think about when these treaties were created, you know, hundreds of years ago, it could not have foreseen everything that was going to happen. It could not have foreseen the development of cities and things like that. So they're saying, if there are not certain implied rights that don't apply to the letter of the language, then, you know, a lot of the other treaties that we have in other states over other things, they could be found, you know, null and void if this case were not upheld.
And what are you looking towards after this decision? Are there any next steps? Are there any other cases that have caught your eye that sort of connect with this one?
So I think this case is going to keep on going, you know, because one of the things about the split decision is that there was no opinion written by the court. So the court has not necessarily grappled with that underlying issue. The Supreme Court has not had its say on this issue of these implied rights, on the fact that the state has to allow there to be salmon and they can't destroy it. So some legal experts believe that, hey, this is just going to actually head back to court, and this case that started in 1974 will pick up again and form another case. And so it seems like they're not completely in the clear now, but, you know, for now, a lot of Native Americans are very satisfied with this ruling and saying, hey, it's a starting point for us, and we can move forward from here.
John Elligo is a national correspondent for the New York Times. John, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.